Hey Mark, welcome to the show. I love your YouTube channel. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks for having me.
So Mark has this interesting channel where he talks about AI and the impact it has on our lives. Are you an actual software developer?
I'm not a software developer. I'm a marketer, and I've just seen the way that AI is impacting the way that I operate, and I see the way that it's impacting the team at the SaaS company that I do marketing for, and other clients as well. You see, I mean, hundreds of billions of dollars being poured into AI. You see thousands, tens of thousands of layoffs happening directly attributed to AI. In fact, AI layoffs have doubled for the last 3 years in a row. This year, 10% of layoffs have been directly attributed to AI. Last year, it was 5%. And the year before that, it was about 2.5%. And the question that I'm asking, how many layoffs are going to be attributed to AI next year? Is it going to continue to double year over year? That's something we need to be asking.
Who's checking to say that they're attributed by AI?
Well, when a company files for layoffs, they typically are going to need to give a reason for those layoffs, whether it's a restructuring or overhiring, or AI. These are the most common reasons that we're seeing layoffs occurring right now.
So I've been using AI agents for 8 months. I've been using AI for about, I don't know, 2 years, something like that. And even just this last 8 months, every day things are improving in terms of its ability. I know that you don't like vibe coding, but if you have my idea is if you're basically overseeing the at least looking at the code in a brief way, you can sort of it's possible for not to destroy everything. Recently, I added to some clients a floor planning tool, and the initial drop was 17,000 lines of code, and it's just me basically me going back and forth with the AI over a couple of months, and just deployed it on production and says like, if our tests don't break, and asked the AI, will it break anything else? It says no, not really. And let it sit there and breathe all that code, and the site didn't break, so it's just going to start using it because it's an urgent need and it saves a lot of time, and it's kind of non-profit work, so it's a lovely place
Listen,
to grow.
I'm not against vibe coding. I'm not a coder. My parents tried to put me into coding school when I was a wee lad, and I didn't like it. I didn't enjoy it. It was too tedious. And recently, there's been this promise that, hey, if you don't know how to code, just pick up Replit. Just pick up Lovable. Just tell the AI what you want it to build, and it will. And at first, when I tried that, I was very excited. I was like, holy crap, I just built an app out of thin air, and I was playing with it. But what I recognized is that there were a lot of problems with the code that was being written. There were a lot of gaps. And someone like me who doesn't fully understand software engineering, software development, I wasn't able to get the results I wanted on the front end because I just don't have the background in software. However, that being said, I was just having a call with our CTO a couple days ago. And he had an interesting revelation. He said, Mark, I'm using Claude to write code, a lot of it. And it's awesome. It's about 90% what a typical coder or programmer could do. And because of that, it's changed the parameters of the next type of person that I hire. I'm not going to need to hire someone to come in and write code because I can use the AI to write the code. I have a different problem now. The problem I have now is I get worn out because I'm not doing any of this automated writing lines of code. I have to do this high-level engineering developer type of work that is a high cognitive load. So I need to hire someone who can take off some of that cognitive load. So it changes the way that we look at hiring for all sorts of tasks, but I think coding is a good example.
Yeah, I'm finding that I'm giving a lot more value than I would normally do because it's a dopamine rush. It's very easy just to think up a feature and then just ask the agent to go away off and do it. And the AI is getting better, so that rush is getting more and more easy to get. So like this Codex 3. Oh, what is it? 2 seconds. I'll check what version it is. There's a Man, is AI affecting my ability to remember things, remember facts? I think I've got too many programs open.
I mean, I covered that in my YouTube channel. That, you know, one of the ways that we learn is by reading, by writing, by doing, by executing. And when you remove that from the equation, sure, you could easily get more reliant on AI, which can impact your ability to streamline different thoughts and ideas together. I mean, one of the, I coach a baseball team. My son, he's six, so I coach this.
Oh, lovely.
These young boys, and I noticed that quite a few of them just have a really hard time paying attention. And, you know, wow. Listen, they're six. One of the tasks that I ask the kids to do every week is not necessarily go and throw with your dads. Sure. I want you to do that. I want you to read, guys. You know, we live in a world now where we're being fed 15 and 30 second videos. That is going to have extreme long-term effects on young people's minds. Not to mention people at the beginning ladder of the corporate and employment structure. The career ladder has been completely disrupted, and we can talk about that as well, if you like.
Yeah, I've actually started going back to paperback books. I had this Audible subscription where you basically have an unlimited amount of Audible books, and you start one book and you're like, it gets a little boring, and you just throw away the book, another book. But then I couldn't remember any of the characters, so I was just listening to all this blah 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 blah, blah. James, Peter, John. I'm like, I don't even remember who the characters. So I just thought, nah, no more Audible subscription. I've got a bunch of paperback books in my little cupboard, so I just started reading them before night, and it took me a while to actually get my mind back into like reading paper. I do read the Bible quite a lot, so that's my reading that I do, and nothing's been able to replace that spiritual experience with the scriptures.
Love that.
So
it's an all-time bestseller for a reason. But you know, I think moving into the next 5 to 10 years, my biggest fear is, what do men like us need to do to remain relevant, respected, and financially free? Because the problems that we've solved in the past, maybe you've been in your career 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, the problems that you've solved in the past are not going to be the problems that you're solving moving forward. Mm-hmm. And so A, we need to learn, how do we add AI into our workflows? How do we streamline with AI? But B, what is our competitive advantage moving forward? How do we stay sharp? Because when you start to offload a lot of that easy stuff at the beginning of your career, it becomes a problem. And I actually just covered this on the YouTube channel today, which is just my name, Mark Savant.
Excellent channel, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And what it's been growing like crazy, 15% to 20% month over month. But what I just covered on the channel today, there's new software for attorneys. And what's happening here is the attorneys are finding, I don't need to hire a paralegal. I don't need to hire a junior attorney to read briefs and put together proposals and do background research. I don't need that anymore. I can just have AI do that. I funnel that into my brain that has wisdom, that has experience, that has critical thinking. And now all of a sudden, it changes the way that I hire. And I think what we're seeing across, I've given you two examples now, paralegals and junior paralegals and junior attorneys, don't need them anymore. That level of the career ladder is dropped off. And then we look at software, coders, programmers, we don't really need those either. So that level of the employment ladder is cut off. And so the next natural problem that's going to come up is, A, these guys can't find jobs because, you know, the employers aren't hiring them, A. And B, well, if we're cutting off the bottom level of the career ladder, that's where the development is. You don't learn how to be an attorney just by listening to Audible. You got to go in there and you got to read, you got to write, you got to get feedback. But if you don't get those formative years of experience, well, how do we bring up the next generation of experts in different fields? How do you bring up the next generation of expert coders when they're not actually coding anymore? It's an interesting problem that I don't think people talk about very much.
Yeah, the big trouble right now is we've got a lot of people that are laid off, and we have a lot of the legacy infrastructure and jobs out there that are still demanding the same prices. So a lot of these lawyers, which are basically perform useless tasks in terms of just stamping, charging £1,000 to stamp a letter, and they still expect this money that they're used to, and they are just they're on borrowed time. Because they don't have any other skills that can be that are fair value. They're just not fair value. The social contract being broken. Look at private universities and universities. They're also vastly overpriced. People used to get into teaching to actually benefit society, but now they just basically try and rip students off for as much debt as possible. And that system is just unsustainable because we all know how wild like AI can teach things. So the way I operate now is I basically try and be the glue between the infrastructure, which is like the AWS or the raw servers, and the lowest level users out there in terms of they're close to the ground, close to the physical interface of what that job is, whether it's like a care provider or it's a non-profit helping, retired soldiers. And I'm the sort of person that sits in between these sort of overlooked areas, and that's where I'm finding that there's a lot of a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not necessarily that AI changes the way that we learn. AI is changing again, the problems that need to be solved. And to your point, historically, you go to school to learn how to solve a subset of problems. One of those is it gets you a step up in the corporate ladder. It gets you to that entry rung so you can get hired somewhere. But if you've gone to school to solve the problem of finding a job, and then it turns out that all these companies are offloading those jobs to AI agents in automation, that problem is not that the problem that you went to school to solve is no longer it's that problem is not being solved there. We need to find new ways to solve that problem of getting experience, getting your foot in the door. And I mean, I think the most realistic way to look at it is that every company right now is looking for people to help them implement and integrate AI into their business in a way that makes sense, that is safe, that is secure, that doesn't lead to, cyber threats. There's a lot of challenges that businesses have, and the businesses that are slow to adapt are just going to have a hard time competing with both on a speed and a profitability standpoint with the small and medium businesses that are executing.
What we're seeing with the reason these companies behave selfish is basically the public companies, the shareholders are so far separated from any loyalty with the people that are employees, and so they don't care where the extra profit comes from. Like if you go buy stocks in BMW, and all you're doing is looking at the price. You don't. I mean, I used to own some BMW shares. I didn't care about like what the company's doing. I just wanted to see the price go up, right? So you have this system that's designed to behave selfishly. And
Well, and I
there's.
don't even necessarily think it's a selfish thing. I was in the insurance world for about a decade. I was managing an office, and eventually I got into podcast and social media production. And what I found was that I can provide a high level of service, and I can also remain functional and have a profit margin that helps me feed my family by hiring people overseas. So I'm working with people in India, I'm working with people in Serbia, Bangladesh, the Philippines is huge. And what that allowed me to do is provide a service to people that they were willing to pay for, while also making, having a dollar that went the distance that I needed it to go. And India, I've got a lot of followers in India and in the Philippines. They're in trouble because those tasks that they used to take care of and handle for business owners like me. I don't know if you've read The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. This has been a thing for almost 15 to 20 years. Let's outsource to other countries because it lowers our cost. And again, it helps. This is not just for huge companies like Google and Microsoft. I was a small business owner. I'm doing $150,000 a year. Saving that every dollar counted. The problem, though, is that moving forward, I'm unlikely to hire someone in India or the Philippines because I can use Claude Cowork and other automations to solve that problem. So there's a whole new set of problems that's going to need to be solved, and people aren't, I think, are slow to change in general.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, yeah, a lot of those sort of boring jobs were outsourced to India back in the day. But yeah, I mean, it
I'll
seems
give you
like.
another example here, just a personal example. When I first got into that business of podcast production and writing, I used to be charged $50 to $100 to write one blog article for a podcast episode. right? Sometimes even more. Well, along came a software called Cast Magic, and I use a few, but Cast Magic is still one of my favorites. Cast Magic can write the blog for 50 cents to a dollar, and it gets me 90% of the way there. So you can start to see, why would I hire someone for $100 when I can get a very similar result for a dollar? That job, that blog writing job, it's not that it doesn't exist, it's that it's changed dramatically from where it was before. The expectation of me as an employer is, why would I pay you $100 to write the blog? I'll give you $10 plus access to my tech stack so that you can do your job more effectively.
But I love the way you do your videos. And the nice thing about your videos is it doesn't look like you're reading from a sheet of paper. You're walking along the street, it's got a vibe, it's got energy. Some YouTube channels, you just know that they're reading off a teleprompter and sitting down. But I think your channel certainly really piqued my interest. I love what you're doing on it. I'd really recommend everyone go to his channel. In terms of vibe coding, and I mean, I guess I'm probably 99.9% now is my code is AI generated. I mean, I basically you can make products that were SaaS products just by asking AI to do it. And I'm not even really reading all of the code because a lot of the code is like really verbose front end code, but the actual stuff that gets saved in the database is actually quite simple. And what I really focus on is the basically the architecture that's and what's sitting on AWS that has to work, but all that complicated stuff about managing seating positions and tables and dragging things around, that's all done by the AI. But that would have taken me years to do that, and I have hand coded stuff, complicated stuff
It
before.
really is, yeah, and it really is unreal what's possible with AI written code right now. Again, I think that it is a little bit dangerous for someone who's never written code before, never built a software, to say, I'm just going to build out my whole CRM infrastructure using AI. And at least in my experience and conversations that I'm having with people, the best use of vibe coding is for small projects. And or projects that don't have a lot of context, because the more context, the more lines of code that you give AI, that it has kind of a tendency to forget, oh, I wrote this code 3 months ago. And it can lead to some infrastructure problems. But that being said, this is the worst that it's ever going to be. It's only going to get better.
What you really need, and what about 80% of the energy that my AIs are doing is fixing their own tests. Because I tell it, write these unit tests, end-to-end tests, and screenshot tests. So when you have a code base that's 250,000 lines, no AI can take that context into its head right now, so it doesn't know where it's going to break. That's why you have a really extensive test suite. So my when I go ask it to do something simple, it'll do something, and a lot of times it'll work. But the whole application is tested with thousands and thousands of lines of code. So if it breaks something, it knows and it won't let it commit it. So that's the only way you can do it, and you have to have that knowledge of what makes stable systems, and that's where the that's what you need to know as a developer to use AI safely on a big important product,
Do you find it, well, in the other thing that happens when you're writing a lot of code or performing many tasks is your token usage can be expensive. I know some guys that got into OpenClaw and they're all of a sudden they're getting a $5,000 bill and they're like, what the heck? And it turns out their AI was just churning tokens. Is that an issue that you've run into in
I
token usage and
burned
expense?
through sometimes I'm only using a GPT plus, but the other week there I ran out of credits, and so I had like 7 hours where I'm like, okay, I'm just going to relax and play some chess or something like that. But now then I just now I've actually got one of my clients to say, hey, you give me your account to run this stuff on, so it's just I'm running a very very lean product. If you're doing a lot of stuff that's on the edge, like 3D graphics and stuff like that, then you're going to burn a lot of tokens. The AI is now at a point where I'm tempted to start doing 3D interfaces with web GPU, which is this new fast replacement for the web GL. And I tried doing some raw native vector maths and all this kind of stuff with like a GPT codex like 7 months ago. I can't remember the name of it. But now I'm thinking, yeah, we can start to push the boundaries of what's possible and evolve what the user interface experience can be. If I'm looking a lot in the construction industry, A lot of times when the agent's doing some work now, I'm doing some like DIY project or something like that. And I'm thinking of like making some maybe some tool to people can go in and do, take some screenshots and then they'll have like a 3D thing generated. That would be normally a SaaS product, but now the AI can. SaaS is basically, I might build a SaaS product for some of the stuff I do, but in the general traditional SaaS stuff, it's like, why would you need to go and use something where only 2% of what that thing offers you actually use? You can just build a lot of the SaaS stuff and hire people like myself that sit basically at that small layer and to referee the AI and the end user, you know?
I mean, SaaS is going to be disrupted tremendously. I mean, you saw, and I covered this on the channel, we just saw a huge tank of the stock market when with one of the recent Claude updates, because investors are A, not sure, banks are not sure they're going to get their return on investment back, and B, that point is really profound. Historically, SaaS is you pay for our suite, you get all the tools, you might only use 10% of them all, but you're still paying for 90%.
You said that in
And
your
then,
video, didn't you, the other day?
you need to pay for all the seats. When instead, moving forward, it's very likely that someone like yourself, Nikos, they'll say, hey, the company will say, hey, we need you to, we have one problem in our organization. Could you just build out a software for us? And if within a couple of days, you could build out a specific AI software that solves that problem at a fraction of the cost. So that is a, I mean, it's hard to say exactly where SaaS is going to go, but that's absolutely something that companies are looking at
Yeah,
right
I
now.
work for a nonprofit and they basically have their own event platform that they have in their own code base. And it's so good they might actually use it for other nonprofits, you know, it's but it's there. And now that adding the seat planner in there, that's like the stuff, it's not on the market. It's all just made with well, it was a lot of, I've been with these guys for 2 years. I know the code base quite well. But the AI powered software is better than what the market has, so they don't have, our organization has no need to go and spend 15% of their ticket sales on Eventbrite. We'd have something better.
Well,
It's going to
that's
just.
also the thing for most, at least small and medium-sized businesses, is you're paying for a software that's not designed for your business, right? You're paying for some sort of software that's divined. It's not a la carte. It's designed for the masses, and so it's not optimized. But to your point, if you have someone on team that can build out something that's more specific and specialized to your unique niche and needs and customers, you're just going to get a better result. Period. Although one of the things that I think is really interesting and where my head's at right now is using Claude Cowork, which allows you to kind of, I don't want to use the word cobble. It allows you to connect all sorts of different apps together. So, we're connecting HubSpot, we're connecting Slack, we're connecting various Google Sheets, Google Spreadsheets, we're connecting all these different platforms together. And so we're able to kind of get these custom specific results based on the inputs from all the different software in the tech stack. And I that's something that I'm very excited about. And again, I think where people are starting to catch on but don't fully understand is 2026 is not going to be the year that AI is a tool. AI is going to be an actual employee. We're going to start to think of AI as an employee within our software. It's going to be our code writers. It's going to be our copywriters. It's going to be our meta ads data analysis. It's going to, in my case, I'm using it for monthly marketing campaign planning and then making sure I can disseminate that information out amongst everyone that is on the team. And again, it sounds like you've been in the business world a while. You probably recognize that onboarding new employees is hard. It's hard. You got to train them.
Investment,
You got to teach them. You got to tell them the best practices. You got to give them all these brand guides. Well, we're kind of looking at AI the same way. We want to build out standard operating procedures, brand guides, messaging guides, testimonials, customer feedback, data and analytics. We want to feed all of that into an AI agent the same way that we would have fed that information into an employee in the past. just with less HR headaches. They're not going to beef with Karen in HR. You don't got to deal with 401k matches and healthcare and getting sick and all these other issues. There's new problems like security and cybersecurity and hallucinations, but it's just an interesting, it's a fundamental shift into the way that we hire people and the way we see AI, I think, in our businesses.
I also find that AI is an excellent project manager. Recently, I tried something with a client and they had like 4 Word documents, a lot of spec. Normally, I would say that's a separate project, separate budget. But I just says, okay, put it all in GitHub. And I says to the AI, go make all the issues, make a phase one, make phase two. And I give it access to my personal access token. It absolutely nailed it, man. It split all the issues into 1, 3, 5, 6. And it says, okay, do the first 2 tickets in phase one. Da-dum, sent the screenshots to the GitHub issue. The client also can send screenshots. The AI reads that. And I'm like, woo, this feels good. Right? It's just the middleman software is just, that's the trouble. That's the layer that needs to retrain.
I will say there is one thing that really annoys me when I'm working with people. And that's when people will spend 3 minutes in ChatGPT, copy and paste it, and then send it to me and like, I did it. And I'm like, but this is wrong. And this doesn't make sense. And why is it worded this way? You know? So I'm definitely pro AI, but I do think there's a misunderstanding with people where they think that they can just copy and paste without saying, I'm going to take the response from AI. I'm going to put it through the God-given critical thinking brain. And then I'm going to give it the best result on the back end. And I think sometimes people feel like they can outsource their critical thinking, their wisdom, their experience. And by bypassing that, I think you kind of cheapen the end result and the value that you as the coordinator, the manager, the expert have in that space. And I'm not saying that's what you're doing, but I just point that out because I know that there's some people on the teams that I work with that it's obvious. It's, you know, they have the emojis, they have the dashes, like stuff is bolded. It's like, you didn't even take the time to read this. Mm-hmm. You put in the prompt, you copy and pasted it. And now you're expecting me to go through your work for quality control. That's your job. Your job as an employee now is to use AI, put it through your brain, do the quality control, and then present the finished product on the back end.
Yeah.
You know,
human to human communication kind of harkens, should have a human touch to it, you know?
Exactly. It's kind of harkens back to that idea that we mentioned earlier, which is, well, AI is kind of making us lazy in a way, as opposed to efficient. And I think there's an important dynamic. We want to be efficient, but not lazy, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, like I said before, that I think a social contract is broken. There's a lot of jobs that are still needed that are essential. And there's a lot of people that are losing their jobs, but there's not the reduction in prices by all the people that have it. Because people that, you know, money is the root of all kinds of evil, as we know. And I really do find just to complete... those that are taking advantage of the AI should do some kind of charitable work, you know, to put back into society. But unfortunately, too many people are takers, and they still want to treat us like human sheep, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly, you know, like Amazon just went through a layoff of 30,000 corporate employees, right? You know, corporate employees, not just employees as a whole. These are corporate white collar jobs. And, you know, there was an internal memo that leaked. I covered this on the channel that said that they plan to replace 600,000 jobs with robots over the next several years. So I totally get that. I think, though, that this is an important opportunity for us to look inward and not make excuses as the problems we have, but look for solutions. And this is not to say that there aren't real problems that need to be solved. There aren't. The social contract is a very real problem. And I know a lot of people feel that. It's important, though, at least the way that I see it, is to say, well, how do I increase my value in the marketplace based on this new set of problems? Because if I want to be relevant, it doesn't matter that something bad happens. It matters, you know, my reaction is what matters. And, you know, at least what I, you know, the three main pieces of advice that I give on the channel is A, your relationships are going to matter probably more than anything else when it comes to being hired, to finding new clients. Your relationships matter. I recommend, you know, to everyone, if you haven't today, pick up the phone, call someone that you respect, but you haven't spoken to in a while. Just, it doesn't matter if you want anything from them. Just, I respect this person. I want to be connected. I think that's an important thing, is the relationships, A, and then B, within any organization that you're working with, whether you're an employee at a company, whether you own your own company, particularly if you work in a company, talk to management, talk to your colleagues, say, this is a time where we just have to be learning how to execute these new tools, mm-hmm. right? And I will tell you this, I would not work at an organization that wasn't giving me access to tools, to AI tools that are going to help me to do my job better. I would get out. I would find somewhere else that would give me access to the tools, because the tools are going to matter more and more and more.
Yeah, you have to be in it, because it's just people that are just working in traditional ways. The market isn't going to pay for that time that it takes. Everything speeds up now. Everything's the minimum bar is high, much higher now, for sure.
And I think people are, you know, one of the things that I hear people say is, well, I don't want to use the AI because I'm just training my replacement. And that's a pretty common thing that people say. But my stance on that is, you want to train your replacement. Because if you're able to replace yourself for one organization, how much more valuable are you to the next organization? Because you can go over there and say, hey, I implemented this AI tool. It was so good, they didn't even need me anymore. I could do the same thing for you guys too. And then all of a sudden you have your own little business. Because we're moving, and there was a comment on the channel the other day that said, careers are dead. There is no more careers, right? It's what's the value that you can give me right now? And, I don't necessarily know how I feel about the gig economy as a whole, but there's a good possibility that a very high percentage of people are going to move out of being an employee and more into like a 1099 contractor. You're not going to be a W-2 employee. You're going to be a 1099 contractor. And so how do you find work as a 1099 contractor is just that. You have to sell yourself. I replace myself over here. I can replace myself for you too. This is how much I'll charge you. And then within 30 days, you'll have this new software bill. And you're doing that right now for the company you're with, right? You build out all this code, you make everything work smooth, everything's great. Then you go to the next company. Hey, look what I did for this nonprofit over here. I can do the same thing for you guys. It'll take me 6 months. I charge 60K, whatever your amount, and you can start to level up that way.
I wish. Yeah, I wish.
But I don't think we can sell ourselves short here, because to your point, in addition to like the numbers game, in that, when you work for a big organization, you're really just part of a math equation at the end of the day. And is they try to lower up expenses, like Oracle is planning to lay off about 30,000 people so they can free up capital to invest in AI and AI infrastructure. They're probably going to free up $10 billion doing that. But I think we need to see ourselves, it's not just those numbers, but as leveling up our skills, because again, the types of problems that we need to solve are going to change at the end of the day.
Yeah. All right, man. I know you've got a hard exit, so I really appreciate time, Mark. I'm looking forward to your next videos, and I'll leave my little snarky comments or funny comments, And I look forward to seeing what you come up with next. And everybody, definitely go check his channel out. One of the hottest channels on YouTube about AI. Legend.
Well, I appreciate Nikos. I'm just very humbled by what the Lord is doing in my life and in the lives of channel subscribers. It's growing like crazy. I don't even have really anything to sell right now. This is just kind of like a passion project, because I can see the tsunami that's coming. And so my goal is not to doom and gloom people, but to kind of wake people up. Yeah. It's not hopeless.
My There's favorite doom and gloom channel.
People think that. But it's kind of funny. People get upset with quote unquote clickbait, but there's a reason why we use clickbait. There's a reason why we use pain. I've run the data, I've run the numbers, and videos that speak to pain, titles that are pain based, mm-hmm. perform way better. Yeah. Than pleasure-based titles. So
I need to try it, man. You wait to see it. The end. AI.
Yeah.
All right, buddy.
Out to get you, or they don't care, or they're not going to stop. That performs much better to you're going to win. This is the opportunity. People tune that out. People, you know, we're hardwired to avoid pain. And I find psychologically that avoiding pain works better than achieving pleasure.
Yeah. Pain and high energy. That's the way to do it, man. Awesome. Yeah.
And even biblical, you've got heaven and hell, right? Heaven and hell. You this stark contrast, and you know, in any event, I believe that AI is going to displace the workforce so substantially. It's going to be, I can be hired, I can be relevant versus I never adapted. And I don't know how we solve that problem.
It's going to be the opportunity for us to do the works of Jesus, helping the poor, Robin Hood style type stuff. We'll see what happens.
Amen.
God bless you, brother.
Thanks for having me, Nikos. You too, brother.
Thanks for coming on the show.